Good morning, everybody. It's Monday, 18th of January, quarter past 10, and let's start and continue this course, risk-based remediation of contaminated environment. This is second week, and last week we were running through the most important laws and regulations, pressures and drivers related to the remediation of contaminated environment. Sorry, there has been some problems with the visibility of these video lectures, but I think now they should work, and if they are not working and they ask you passcode, just please type ENVS 1128 and then there shouldn't be any problems. Okay, during the second week we are also hurrying up through this background material related to this course, and before we really can enter to the most important part of the course, our real case and working with the real cases, real contaminants, real sites, and then selection of the innovative technology you are supposed to introduce to the authorities instead of this traditional excavation, today, I will continue to talk about the background information, and in fact, today I will go through the material what is required for the so-called first part of the group work. So you should start, okay? You should start find a partner, but if you can't find a partner, then you can work alone. And then I see that some of you have already been looking for nice articles, and they are related to contaminated environment, and there are several different kind of contaminants. There are hydrocarbon, diesels, gasolines, additives in gasolines. There are polychlorinated hydrocarbons, there are polychlorinated dibenzo dioxins and furans, and so on and so on. If you choose some of those, or then this some of the metals which occur in Finland, like lead, chromium, and so on. You can choose that compound and start to collect these physical and chemical properties and a little bit toxicological properties related to these compounds what you are interested in. And I hope that you will submit the couple of pages, including this information, the basic information what I list today, my sincere hope is that you could do that already, that part this week. It shouldn't take very long time to find those figures and values. Okay, yes, I would like to show you also this assignment, review of scientific paper, and some of you have selected already very, very relevant articles, and I have then make a list of some articles which are familiar for me that contains contains information of these innovative remediation technologies. There has been articles around with about this Fenton treatment. There are soil washing techniques. There are biocomposting. There are phytoremediation. Yes, all of them are very, very useful, and you can get good ideas for your innovative technology. Let's go now to this presentation. Shall I open this one? Can you see my PowerPoint presentation now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps we will go this way. Okay. Okay. So let's run through the whole background. The problem is that before we used to have several courses that covered this issue, like environmental chemistry and environmental toxicology and risk assessment, and now we have none of them. But we should be able to work and in this area and to be prepared to solve these cases of environmental risks or environmental contamination, whether it is in the soil, groundwater, perhaps in sediment. I have also talked about the contaminated buildings, and it's the very same procedure. So where are these problems coming from? And they are very much man-made. It is this industrial revolution and the invention of all nice new chemicals which were supposed to be harmless when they were invented. But little by little, when there were more data coming from the toxicological and epidemiological evidence, ecotoxicological evidence that these compounds, they are causing, for example, death of birds and insects, and the general increase of this interest of general population, administration, politicians. Also, then little by little, there has been the increase of awareness, and I have been working more or less 40 years in this area, and there has been so much positive going on and in the area, and I'm happy to be able to teach you how these most severe environmental problems can be prevented or solved and correct this careless release of products and harmful compounds into the environment. And and today I'm going to talk about the chemistry, and perhaps later on a little bit about the analytical chemistry, because without this environmental analytical chemistry, we wouldn't be aware of this wide range problem of occurrence of these harmful compounds in the environment. And now we are more or less in the situation that we are solving these problems in the area of environmental case, I would like always to put prevention first and then remediation and recovery. And we have two different kind of type of problems. We have problems with our on site, and we should solve this problem on site, which means where this hazardous material is. And extreme case is in situ, where in situ remediation, in situ techniques is something that we don't touch. We leave the contaminated groundwater or soil to be there. If it's pumped, if the groundwater is pumped to the surface of the soil, that it's on-site treatment, or if we excavate the material and do the treatment on-site, we don't transport this material to somewhere else to be treated. But at the moment, this kind of off-site treatment, waste management of this contaminated material is the most common technology to solve this problem. And 90% of the cases are this kind of excavation, transport, and disposal somewhere, hopefully to some proper, legal, modern, hazardous landfill. And even better, if this material can be treated harmless in that spot. And this kind of activity should be, you know, very, very precisely documented. And if it's done according to Finnish guidelines and instruction at the moment, there is this cradle to grave line of documents that nothing is disappearing or dumped illegally. So there is an paperwork and signatures that the material actually what is digged out of the soil is transported and it reaches the landfill, and then it is there. And also there is this requirement for the analysis and quality assurance of all these activities, what is going on. And that's very nice because it offers very, very, very interesting and pretty well paid job for also our student. Something about the generation of this hazardous materials, what is inside our buildings. We have asbestos, for example. We have paints that contain lead, PCB. Those compounds were considered totally harmless and very, very useful, and they are that. But like pesticides were, when they were invented, they were considered miracles to increase the harvest, this yield and get rid of the pests and insects but within the time there has been this new information that this good old useful compounds which has been used and have been useful There are also adverse effects. And here also I can mention my favorite area that like pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals are useful. We can't manage without them, but pharmaceuticals can be also environmentally problematic, and they are contaminating environment. And you will see that there will be a lot of change of practices in the area of the use of pharmaceuticals, as it has been used in the case has been the same very same with this many pesticides, additives, and let's say like chlorinated phenols. They were highly used for 50 years before we noticed that, hello, these are very hazardous compounds. And I think that you are going to be in the labor market for 40 years, and during the 40 years there will be more and more chemicals which are used very widely at the moment. They will turn out to be hazardous, like this. Some textiles with release microplastics, or some additives and can consumable products turn to be hazardous little by little. Then there are this dumping of the so-called waste, spent material, byproducts, useless products which has been dumped into the environment, or there has been unintentional formation of byproducts. For example, this KY5, koivitonen, a Finnish product which contains different kind of chlorinated phenols. When they produce this product, there were byproduct formation of polychlorinated dioxin and furans, so that the product contained couple of percent of this super hazardous contaminants, dioxins and furans, and this most toxic known man-made compound, four chlorinated dipentadioxin. It's not never manufactured by itself. It's byproduct of the product, or it is created in burning process. So, and also many of those polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which we know that they are very hazardous, and when they are formed in the burning process, for example, in traffic or in wood stove or burning some energy, these PAH compounds, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, including metal and many unknown compounds, they cause 120 extra cancer cases, lung cancers cases in Finland at the moment. This is very recent information. I just read it last night from the internet. Then the treatment of air emissions or wastewater emissions when this hazardous material is removed from the flue gas or wastewater, material doesn't disappear. It's just collected and dumped somewhere. And we have this kind of end product of the treatment processes all over the world and all over the Finland. Sometimes they are in the industrial landfills, but also they have been dumped into the normal landfill particularly before we didn't have any hazardous waste treatment facility in Finland before we got Ekokem in the end of 80s. And then the commercial chemical products which are known or unknown, present or potentially future problem in environment. Okay, now to go to the chemistry. Very, very, very quickly. I hope and I believe and I think that I'm quite sure that you have studied quite amount of chemistry and you are familiar with different kind of classes of chemical compounds, alkanes, their name, their structure, structures and also the basic reactions of those compounds. And based on the structure and based on the physical and chemical properties, we can divide our nasty compounds to classes. We have volatile organic compounds. We have semi-volatile organic compounds, and we have non-volatile organic compounds. Each of them, I will talk a little bit later on, and besides of this, of course, we have also these metals and inorganic compounds. And what is typical for volatile compounds which are environmental problem? For example, solvents. Solvents and gases are quite common. And when you go to the data source, whatever you want to use, you should, for example, to take first the boiling point of the compound and melting point of the compound. So whether your compound is a solid, liquid, or gas, and in which conditions, what are the temperatures when they transfer the media. Volatile compounds have a high vapor pressure. They have high Henry's law constant. They might have high solubility in water. Usually they are small molecules, and in the partitioning of the experiment or test, shaking of this compound in a bottle that contains water and octanol, the partitioning of this compound between the octanol and water is very, very important and very, very simple test. And if this compound X tends to be in octanol, let's say 10 times, no, no, what, that 1,000 times higher concentration in octanol than in water, then we can think that this compound is going to stuck in everything what is in the soil, and it's not water soluble. If it's in the water phase, and then it's going to probably also be happy to be in water, usually water, but in generally solvent. That is the most easy easy test to assess the partitioning of the compound into an environment. Then a little bit more complicated is this test to test the partitioning of the compound between organic carbon and water, because there are so many different kind of soil material and solid material in available in the test, and that's why the standard OECD the standard test this gives you the reference compounds which are typical soil in different part of the world, and then you have to give the information of this this material what you are using. And also it is the organic matter what is in this on this solid matter what matters. But also there are so many different kind of organic fractions of the soil. There are these universal correction and correlation constant to somehow to estimate the partitioning of the compounds between organic matter in the soil but that is something like average of probably hundreds of different kind of organic materials occurring in the world. Then comes this experiment with measure the bioconcentration factor in the food chain, and whether this compounds wants to be in the water or whether it is concentrated to animals, Daphnia magna or fish, and any fatty compounds in the system. That is a bioconcentration factor, and that spells problem. Then very many of our compounds what we are concerned, like polyaromatic hydrocarbon, nitroamines, ethers like dioxin furans, phthalate esters, and aromatic alcohols and phenols, they are considered as semi-volatile compounds. And what is typical for them is the low solubility, low Henry's law constant, low vapor pressure, high partitioning coefficient with the organic matter in soil, low partitioning coefficient between organic octanol and water, and high bioconcentration factor. And there are also compounds where this water solubility can vary, like aromatic alcohols and phenols. They can be with the high to low water solubility. The vapor pressure can vary, and it depends on the ratio of the volatility water solubility. And then non-volatile organic compounds, and one criteria of the classical environmental hazardous chemical is it is that it contains all these typical compounds, and it tends to accumulate into fatty tissue in food chain. It is persistent for the degradation, photodegradation, or biological degradation of hydrolysis. It is persistent in the environment. Then it tends to accumulate that from the low concentration in the original media, it concentrate usually in the food chain and on the top of the food chain, for example, fatty fish like salmon, herrings, or birds, eagles. The dose what they can collect is extremely high. And when and if this compound is accumulated and it's also toxic properties. I will talk more about this toxic endpoints of some hazardous compounds. They really can be the biggest problem in environment. So please go to the data source, go take your selected compound, and please collect all those physical and chemical properties into the just normal list, like this solubility. Usually solubility to water, and usually in the environment, the solubility concentration is actually the concentration itself. But if the concentration is very high, the concentration and activity is not the same anymore. Then there are a lot of compounds which are either soluble or non-soluble or partially soluble into the water. And in environmental remediation, we have plenty of those kind of nasty compounds. For example, hydrocarbons, gasoline, diesel, chlorinated solvent. For example, this gasoline or hydrocarbons, this low carbon compounds are quite water soluble, and when this carbon chain increase is we are talking like diesels, and more the longer that the carbon chain is, the hydrocarbon is less water soluble, and the solubility of the compound X depends to the temperature. For example, if it's gas, increase of the temperature enhance the volatility of the gas from the water to the air. And for example, that can be used in a soil remediation, for example, by heating the soil or doing the distillation, for example. This is one way to clean one matrix by transferring the volatile compound to another matrix. But with water soluble solids, the solubility increase with the increasing temperature. Then about these like salts, ions, the solubility of those depends on the concentration. The concentration is low. These ions, cations, ions, and anions can be soluble, but when they exceed the solubility constant, they precipitate out of the solution. And again, this is very typical way to handle the treatment of hazardous material, to use precipitation or coagulation to increase the ions in order to precipitate this hazardous material out of the solution. This is working for the metals, and this is working for example for phosphorus in the wastewater. It is precipitated out of the wastewater by adding iron or calcium or aluminium salts, increasing the solubility, increasing the concentration about the point, and it's super saturated. Excuse me. Then I have one very typical picture, which combines these properties and what does they mean in practice. And here we have a tank which is leaking. It can be, for example, like hydrocarbon tank, but it can contain whatever. There are possibilities that when it's released into the soil, if it's volatile, it can evaporate by itself, or this offer us a technique for the soil vapor extraction. If our compound is non-aqueous phase liquid, it means that it doesn't dissolve into the water. It has a phase of its own, and it has totally different pathway in the soil than if it's water soluble. We will discuss with this nasty group of compounds which are in soil or sediment. They don't dissolve into the water. And also there they have two possibilities. If they are heavier than water, they will go to the groundwater aquifer and sink into the bottom of the aquifer. And usually there are the bedrock, and there are fractures in the bedrock, and these nasty compounds are able to reach those fractures, and the fractures in the bedrock is very easy and direct and unpredictable way for those kind of compounds very, very long distances. This compound can spread to the very unpredictable places. And then there are these lighter than water non-aqueous phase liquid with remains floating on the surface of the groundwater. And somehow it's a little bit easier if you manage to locate it. It's a little bit easier to collect it from the on the surface of the this aquifer. Okay, but what happens after this immediate release of the contaminant into the environment? It starts to travel somewhere. Okay, vapor pressure, it means that It has the tendency to go to the atmosphere, gas phase. And for easy case and water, it obeys Henry's law. And usually we have a mixture of hydrocarbons, and then we don't have one single compound, but we have an uncountable number of different kind of hydrocarbons with different kind of properties. So then you have to use Raoul's law. And also, even this is more practical one, it has its own problems, because in environment, in reality, the conditions are so variable that they don't obey these laws nicely. Yeah, please go and pick the Henry's law constant for each of your compound, because by combining water solubility and Henry's law constant, you can assess this evaporation, tendency of evaporation. It has a low water solubility and high Henry's law constant, it's very probable that this compound end up to the gas phase. But there are also compounds which has a very high Henry's law constant, but also very high water solubility. It also affects to the fate of the compounds in the environment. Then diffusion coefficients. So how quickly this compound travels in the either soil, in the water, in the air. And I don't go to these laws. We don't have time and to talk too much of this diffusion, and one aspect that affects to the diffusion and speed, how quickly this compound is spreading in environment, particularly if in soil and also in water, it's this partitioning coefficient. And as I told, the easiest one is partitioning. Partitioning coefficient between octanol and water. And then comes this partitioning coefficient between soil water coefficient with organic carbon in the soil. And now I can mention already that why this organic matter in the soil is so important, because that is the most strongest absorbent and it is capacity to absorb and hold and decrease the speed of the spreading of the hazardous chemical, because there is a very many different mechanism for organic matter to either hold this compound permanently or just like impermanently, and it makes the spreading of the contaminant usually slower. Here I have used the example like chromatography. If you are familiar with chromatography and you know what happens to the compound or the sample in the column, so different compound are traveling through the column with the gas or liquid phase. And it depends on the partitioning between these different compounds between the mobile phase and the stationary phase. Some will stick on the mobile, on the solid phase, and they travel very slowly, but some of them doesn't absorb onto the matrix at all and travel through this column very quickly. But the very same, for example, if you have like gasoline, some compounds, long chain hydrocarbons, they will absorb to the organic matter quite nicely. But then there are also these additives, benzene, xylene, and also this additive, this MTBE. They are very water soluble, and they are traveling very fast and contaminate the groundwater with very long distances, because they don't have this problem of be absorbed on the organic matter. And then I also mentioned about this bioconcentration factor. If you can find it, it's fine. But this relates to the toxicology, but I don't actually know any environmental remediation technology which is using this bioconcentration factor. Or perhaps something like if you have worms and the compounds are collected from the compost, for example, to the worms, because the worms contains fats. Perhaps something like that, but not so much. Sorption, yeah. Sorption and absorption. Adsorption and desorption are together sorption. And sorbent is the compound, for example, activated carbon. It can be this organic matter in the soil surface. Sorbate is the contaminant, what is removed, and the solvent is the liquid, and in our case, it's a water. And what happens to the sorbate, this compound X? It can be attached on the surface, usually on the surface. Sometimes in activated carbon, it has so many pores, and the surface area of the activated carbon is so big that the compound actually penetrates very deep into the activated carbon. It's not only on the surface, it's in deep in the activated carbon. And this driving force of the adsorption are electrical attraction. There are van der Waal forces, which are quite weak forces, and this adsorption can be very temporary and weak. Hydrogen bonds are a little bit stronger forces to hold, and covalent bond between sorbate and sorbent. Usually they are even like a permanent. You really need to try to regenerate this sorbent in order to get rid of this compound, because there are actually like bonds between this compound and this material. Okay, do you have any questions related to this assignment that you should go to the different kind of databases and try to find these properties. Can you do it this week? I will make a, in fact, there is already a folder. You can put your name, your group, your compound, and submit it there. And I will check, and when it's checked, that task is then completed. Okay? Okay. Yes, no. Okay?
Yep, okay.
Yes. Okay. Something little bit about more about the transport. Transport it relates to the pollution, but also when we do want to do the remediation with this transport or how strongly this compound is attached and how easily you can get it out of this matrix depends on the very similar properties. Okay, these emission, this compound, what we are interested in, we can say that the contaminant is coming from the point source. It can spread. For example, there are very many compounds where the origin is actually the flue gas. And the emissions initially in the air is washed out either by wet or dry deposition. The contamination can be, for example, the source of the contaminant can be a line, for example, roads. We can consider roads as a line source of, let's say, in good old times, source of lead. It also a source of small particles. It's source of it is source of volatile organic carbon, unburned fuel, and and the concentration of the pollutant decrease with the distance from the line. Sometimes this line source of contaminant can be, for example, a pipe, leaking pipeline or a ditch. Then it can be an area where this compound has been dumped to the, in this case, this looks like a soil infiltration lagoon. Unfortunately, still too common way to get rid of the contaminants and also used widely in Finland in the beginning of the 80s when I started to go around and I have seen so many of those by my own eyes here in Finland. And nowadays also still, for example, in Kenya, where I also have a lot of activities. This is the typical way to get rid of the problem. And then this source of the contaminant can be also a buff, something like accident and release of container or leakage of the tank, rupture of the tank car full of diesel or gasoline. And yes, earlier during this course, one of the chapter was demonstrating of the spreading of this kind of puff or bloom of accidental spill how quickly it can spread. And we had very nice and shocking and motivating examples when we calculated the rupture of the container full of gas, chlorine, for example, because very quickly the concentration of gas in, for example, in the railway station when it's spreading with the wind, and the zone where the concentration of chlorine is lethal, it's a couple of kilometers. So, but now we don't work in this area anymore. Okay, the contaminant releases from air. They can be either from gas phase or particulate matter. And there were very interesting article in the latest Tiede 2000 magazine, because it was discussing about this particle matter in the atmosphere, including all these natural sources of volcanoes, solar particles, man-made particles, burning byproducts, but also the particle matter coming from the space. The transport of the contaminant into the environment takes place very often as a form of effluent. Effluent is waste treated or untreated wastewater which is released into the either to the surface waters or to the soil. And examples are very typical even nowadays. Effluents from Jyväskylä wastewater treatment plant in Nenäniemi is dumped. Now it's released to the northern part of Päijänne. But before that, it was dumped to the Jyväsjärvi. And Jyväsjärvi was very contaminated until the 70s. And still the sediments of Jyväsjärvi are source of several contaminants coming from the municipality or domestic use. And also there was this kind of sawmill or factory in the Lutakko area, and whatever they compounds they used in the forest industry at that time, it was incredible compounds, starting from the mercury, the chlorinated phenols, you just name it. Totally forbidden nowadays, but many of those compounds are still in the sediments close to the forest industry factory. Cooling water tower can also be a source of the thermal pollution, normal pollution, but also it can be a breeding place of Legionella bacteria. And this Legionella bacteria and spreading of the Legionella bacteria by this kind of cooling towers has been recognized a serious environmental health problem worldwide, also including Finland. And then are these landfill leachate, treated or untreated landfills. Glycerate is a water which goes through this material, and it's this liquid phase containing all these nasty compounds. Nowadays, these landfill glycerate are collected, for example, here in Jyväskylä, and pumped into the sewer network and Nenäniemi. But still, all the old landfill, all this rainwater which is passing to the waste material is washing out uncountable number of compounds which were once dumped in the landfill. Okay, and I would say that there is no controlled release of the contaminated water into the groundwater is what is legal at the moment in Finland. It was legal, but nowadays it's totally forbidden, and it is the environmental protection law, was it section 8, that contamination of groundwater is absolutely forbidden. But it occurs by accident, for example, by because of the use of pesticides, chemicals, and yes, this is one of my favorite things. This on-site sanitation in countryside. For example, in Finland, there are about 1 million people who are living outside of the wastewater collection system. They have this on-site system, usually 2 or 3 compartment septic tank, but the water still goes through this system, and the removal efficiency of these septic tanks is insufficient. Even though there are some filter bed or something like that, still at least viruses and bacteria are able to pass this system and end up to the groundwater. And the groundwater means usually, unfortunately, it's your own well or neighbor's well, and that is far too common source of the waterborne outbreak of some disease. Deep well injection of this industrial chemicals is considered as an option, but I don't know that in Finland that has been practiced. But in other countries, yes, they think that there are so deep layers and suitable layers of, for example, this different kind of geological formation, that if you dump them there, they will vanish for totally. But this is not, I would say, possible in Finland. Then come these uncontrolled release accidents. Yes, industrial accidents and accidents related to the transport of the chemicals. Nowadays, there are no hazardous chemicals on the roads anymore. Only diesel and gasoline is transported by trucks. But otherwise, the transport of hazardous chemicals is now taking place by the trains. It's not like 100% safe method, but it's much, much safer than the transport by cars. Then comes this landfill leachate, meaning that this hazardous material is washed with water to the close groundwater. But also at the moment, and within couple of last 20 years, this old small industrial landfill has been remediated. They have been digged out, dumped properly, made proper liners and proper collection of methane gas formed in the waste material, and the proper collection of the rainwater. So okay. Yes. Earlier, and perhaps in US, this remediation of landfills and recapsulating or building barriers to prevent the spreading of the contaminants from the municipal landfill is more acute problem in some other countries than in Finland. Okay. The contaminant X is spreading in the soil according to Darcy's law, which depends on the hydraulic conductivity of the soil material, hydraulic gradient, and cross-section area of flow measured perpendicular to the flow direction. Okay, we jump also that very quickly this year, and I just want to mention that it depends that what is the soil material. If it's like gravel sand or sandy soil, this kind of soil is very sensitive for all kind of permeation of contaminant and spreading of the contaminant. Also, it means that this kind of soil is very productive for the generation of the groundwater, which is positive. But that's why that kinds of areas are also very sensitive for the pollution. And traditionally in Finland, the roads has been made on this kind of esker, harjuille, and since the gasoline is still transported by this road, there has been a very big campaign to create permeable barrier around the road in order to prevent or at least collect the leakage of the hydrocarbons coming from the accident, and keep the hydrocarbon in liquid form on the surface until the firefighters are coming and starting to pump and collect the hydrocarbon and absorb it into the absorbent like peat, for example. Peat is used for the collection of hydrocarbons or other leaking materials. Because if this hydrocarbon diesel and particularly gasoline, if it reaches the groundwater, it starts to spread with the groundwater very quickly, and the damage is almost like permanent. Sandy and silty clay material can considered also almost like sometimes that they are like protective barriers, that no water and no compounds carried with the groundwater can penetrate this kind of sandy soil or sandy layers. And the mechanisms of this spreading, it's good for you to know the words. Advection of contaminant means that this contaminant X is traveling with the groundwater with the same speed and same direction with the groundwater. Dispersion of the compound X means that there are some obstacles in the soil, including like solid particles, sand particles, gravel particles, stones, with force the water and flow of the water and compound to X to make turns. And this makes this spreading of the compound X a little bit slower. Dilution is caused by this brown movement that that the concentration gradients tends to want to go to the equilibrium. Those mechanisms of the transport of the compounds in soil can be classified for mechanical processes, including this advection, dispersion, diffusion, and also this density stratification, whether the compound is heavier or lighter than when water. And also this, whether this compound is dissolved or not into the water. Then can chemical processes with influence the spreading. There can be oxidation production processes. For example, there are possibilities that let's say that your metal contaminant is in reduced form. It is either manganese or iron too, and then it reach condition with oxygen concentration. It is oxidized, and the oxidized form of these metals precipitate out. Or other way around. There are some areas where the very same metals are oxidized and precipitated, fixed into the soil, but when the oxygen is running out from the soil, the conditions turns to anaerobic, and then the metals in reduced forms are released from the soil matrix. Chemical process and also ion exchange. If you have a positive and negatively charged contaminants and matrix, they can attract each others, and it can be either permanent or non-permanent absorption. Then come chemical processes, complexation, precipitation, partitioning and sorption. And then comes biological processes that actually the compound X is degraded by fungi, bacteria in the soil in either in aerobic condition or in anaerobic condition. The point, this contaminant X is food for bacteria. Or it's not food, but it doesn't harm this degradation And with the normal food for the bacteria, also the hazardous compound is consumed, and in the very best case, we can get rid of that. Biological uptake is something that bacteria, some plants, for example, when we are talking about phytoremediation, they can collect and accumulate hazardous compounds or hazardous metals. There are some plants which, for example, are super absorber of salts, and by that mechanism they collect these metals from the soil. I think I have I have this more detailed about this chemical processes with happens in the soil, and one, the first is retardation, and in this context, this word means that this compound is accumulating permanently or temporarily into the matrix. It's immobilization, the compound from the free state on the surface of matrix. Attenuation is something less permeable, that this compound is attached on the material. And these two first, they are meaning that they hold the compound in the soil, but it can also be contrary. There are some phenomena which in fact enhance the mobility of the compounds in the soil. For example, the change of the redox concentration, and also this enhancement of the mobility can be used in the soil remediation. And for example, soil washing and all these oxidation method, what I'm going to introduce you, are based on the change of the condition in the soil, in order that the solubility of the problematic compound on the soil is released from the matrix, and it's bioavailable for the bacteria, or it's in the liquid phase. Of course, it turns to more toxic in these conditions, but also it gives us a tool to manipulate the flow of the water and collection of the water and treatment of the water that contains this compound, problematic compound. So the soil washing is one of those methods I would like you to consider instead of excavating the contaminated soil. Okay. And the more permanent absorption of the contaminated into the soil, this is the most important absorption of organic material in the soil. It is able to accumulate organic chemicals on the surface of the organic matter inside into organic matter either by ion exchange, and humic matter or organic matter usually contains molecules, macromolecules which has more negatively charged functional groups, which means that this offers a possibility for metals and cations to be attached to the system. Or then there are also some minerals which have positively charged functional groups, and those groups attach negatively charged contaminants. Precipitation occurs when the concentration of chemicals is more than the solubility constant. So it becomes oversaturated and start to the excess of the compounds start to precipitate out of the system. And filtration is a simple process. It means that this contaminant, which is in particle phase, is trapped by the pore or material physically, and it's clogging the soil and but it can also be artificial filter. We have sand filter, for example, which can be used for the removal, and if besides of the physical sorption of filtration, quite often some other material, ceramic material, or this activated carbon material, or some artificial absorbing material is combined to the filtration in order to enhance the removal of the contaminants. Okay, and still more about the chemistry. The basic background chemistry with dictates the behavior of the contaminant in the soil, sediment, or groundwater, but also the very same processes also are the principle behind the remediation. You are manipulating the conditions. For example, you can use this chemical oxidation or chemical reduction in order to either fix or release the compounds from the contaminated material. Biological oxidation, biodegradation is one of the best and cheapest and useful method for the soil remediation, but unfortunately it's suitable just for those compounds which are biodegradable. So bacteria and fungi can use this material as a source of food and energy. And one of my big dream, what I have been practicing for 30 years, is that by pre-treating this recalcitrant compound, usually by chemical oxidant, I can split the harmful compound to something smaller molecules, something what is more water soluble, more bioavailable, and which can be fed to the bacteria. And combining this kind of chemical oxidation to the biological degradation, we could enhance and do the remediation in situ. Then comes hydrolysis, which is a spontaneous reaction where the water molecule it's combined to the compound. And then comes this volatilization. and then also, so also the name of the mechanism what we are going to use in the enhanced and innovative remediation technologies, consolvation using some solvent to get the compound out of the matrix, ionization. Using acids in order to give us huge amount of protons, and then there are competition with of the protons and metals, and if this this bonding of the metal and this absorbent is non-permeable, this proton can replace the cation from the matrix. This solution, liukeneminen, means that you are doing some kind of soil washing, and that we have been using olive oil, oils, commercial detergents, and then we have a big project going on, and I'm looking for candidate for making master thesis of use of the peat-based products, humic compounds, to do this kind of soil washing and releasing the compounds from the matrix to the water phase. And complexation is another mechanism which is also based on the humic compounds, and the fact that organic matter and humic compounds particularly have this kind of negatively charged functional groups which can make complex with cations, and by this way to somehow to wash out the compounds from the contaminated media, and yes, and hope that you are willing to try some of those new in situ mechanism in your case. Okay, and now it's your turn to more or less to collect all those compounds, in information of those compounds, and make a short data sheet of this one. I was planning to go through also through the toxicology during this lecture, but I'm afraid that you have to study, or I give a lecture of my own, and then it's up to you if you want to lecture that extra lecture dealing with toxicology, how to engineer runs through the very basics of the toxicology, what we should know in order to be able to understand why this remediation and environmental control is so necessary.